Welcome to Daily Wisdom, Walking the Path with the Buddha, a podcast shared by David Roylance. This podcast is dedicated to guiding you to completely eliminate the discontent mind and the suffering it causes by attaining enlightenment. Learn and practice the teachings of Gautama Buddha that will guide you to fully attain a peaceful, calm, serene, and content mind with joy. To support this podcast, visit patreon.com/supportbuddha or visit buddhadailywisdom.com, where you will discover a full range of courses, retreats, and online learning resources to assist you on the path to enlightenment. Now, here's our teacher to share more.
Sawadee krap. Hello and welcome to Daily Wisdom, Walking the Path with the Buddha. Today is our Pali Canon and English study group where we study the words of the Buddha. We're in volume 11, which is titled The Realms of Existence. We're in chapters 31 through 40, exploring the animal realm today. We're moving through this book 10 chapters at a time, just like we do with all the other books. And today's chapters happen to be about the animal realm, where last week's chapters were about the hell realm. So as you're learning the teachings here in this particular book, it's important to help you understand that the Buddha's sharing with you the various aspects of these realms so that you can understand what leads to rebirth in those realms and how an individual would get out of those realms in order to move into other realms. Having an understanding of the cycle of rebirth in the various realms will help you in that if you start experiencing memories of your past lives, you'll know that you're not going insane. Or if you start experiencing communication with beings from these various realms like hell, animal realm, afflicted spirits, of course, the human realm, and the heavenly realm, that you can actually experience interaction with these beings. So I'd like to welcome you to our class today and invite you to join for learning and understanding the teachings of the Buddha. As we go in our class, what I do is either someone in Zoom or myself will read the chapter. Then I will share some teachings on that for about 5 minutes or so, and then I'll open up to any and all questions that you guys have. You can ask questions by putting those into Facebook, YouTube, or Zoom. Or in Zoom, you can electronically raise your hand and ask any questions or follow-up questions directly. So I'm going to display these chapters here for you guys so that you guys can see the chapters that we're studying today. And you can always get these books from downloading them from BuddhaDailyWisdom.com. If you go there, there's a link for free books. You can get all of these books, the entire 13-book book series, which is all based in the words of the Buddha. You can download them for free. You can take them and go print them, or you can get printed versions either at the temple here where I teach in Chiang Mai or on Amazon. You're able to acquire printed versions. So you can study these either before and or after class, but if for some reason you were unable to study them during the week, then you can come to class like this and study them as a study group. So this class is more of a study group, where the other programs that I teach, it's more of me teaching you and helping you to be able to understand the teachings in a more traditional teaching method. So this first chapter, 31, is titled The Serpents. Now, at that time, a certain serpent was troubled about his birth as a serpent. He was ashamed of it, loathed it. Then it occurred to that serpent, "Now, by what means could I be freed quickly from birth as a serpent and get back to the human realm?" Then it occurred to that serpent, "These ascetics, sons of the Sakyans, are teachings farers, even farers, Brahmin farers. They are truth speakers. They are of moral habit, of good conduct. Now, if I were to go forth among the ascetics, sons of the Sakyans, so would I be freed quickly from birth as a serpent and could get back to the human realm?" Then that serpent, in the form of a Brahmin youth, having approached the monks, asked for the going forth. The monks let him go forth. They ordained him. Now at that time, that serpent, together with a certain monk, was living in a dwelling place on the edge of town. Then that monk, getting up in the night towards dawn, paced up and down in the open air. Then that serpent, confident that the monk had gone out, fell asleep. The whole dwelling place was filled of the snake. His coils were protruding, through the windows. Then that monk, thinking, I will enter the dwelling place, opening the door, saw the whole dwelling place full of the snake, his coils protruding through the windows. Terrified at seeing this, he let out a cry of distress. Monks, having run up, spoke thus to that monk, Why did you, venerable sir, let out a cry of distress? Venerable sirs, this whole dwelling place is full of a snake. His coils are protruding through the windows. Then that serpent, having awakened, because of this noise, sat down on his own seat. Monks spoke thus, Who are you, friend? I am a serpent, honored sirs. But why did you, friend, act in this way? Then that serpent told this matter to the monks. The monks told this matter to the perfectly enlightened one. Then the perfectly enlightened one, on this occasion, in this connection, having had the community of monks come together, spoke thus to this serpent. Indeed, you serpents are not liable to growth in these teachings and discipline. You serpent, go away. Observe the observance day precisely on the 14th, 15th, and 8th day of the half month. Thus, you will be freed quickly from birth as a serpent and get back to the human realm. Then that serpent, thinking, It is said that I am not liable to growth in these teachings and discipline, pained, troubled, shedding tears, departed, having let out a cry of distress. Then the perfectly enlightened one addressed the monks, saying, Monks, there are these two cases of observation of a serpent's true nature. When he indulges in sexual intercourse with a female of his own species, and when he falls asleep in confidence. Monks, these are two cases of observation of a serpent's true nature. Monks, if an animal is not ordained, it should not be ordained. If it is ordained, it should be expelled. So here, this chapter is helping you to understand that animals aren't able to train their mind and actually get to enlightenment. That's essentially what the Buddha starts teaching down here to help the snake understand that they're not liable to growth in these teachings and discipline. He's explaining that animals can't get to enlightenment because we understand that beings in the hell realm, the animal realm, and the afflicted spirit realm, which are considered the lower realms, are unable to train their mind and develop it to a point where it can get to enlightenment. They're going to need to be reborn into a human existence or a heavenly existence where those beings actually have the ability to get to enlightenment. So this particular snake was very close to being reborn into the human realm because it could transition itself to look like a human being. Now, I've never seen this for myself, but this is something that we see in the teachings. And it does illustrate a point that animals can't actually get to the enlightened mental state. And then down here, the Buddha is essentially saying, okay, this is the way that you can tell that this is actually a snake, because this snake, having transitioned itself to look like a human, it seems like the monks were unable to determine whether it was a human or a snake based on its appearance. So the Buddha provides these two ways to know whether it's actually a snake or it's a human. And he shares that if a animal is not ordained, then it shouldn't be ordained, because the only reason to be ordained is to train your mind and get to this enlightened mental state. And if an individual can't get to enlightenment, meaning they're an animal, there's no reason for them to actually be ordained. And then if they have been ordained, like this one was actually ordained, the Buddha is saying, okay, it should be unordained, because there's no ability for this animal to get to enlightenment. They're going to need to be in that human or heavenly existence. So let me know if you guys have questions on this chapter. You can put it into Facebook, YouTube, or Zoom. Or in Zoom, you can raise your hand electronically and ask any questions that you like. Okay, Mayu Lee's asking a question here. What does the Buddha mean for the serpent to observe the observance day precisely on the 14th, 15th, and 8th day of half month? What I think this is referring to is the Buddha taught his students that when there's a certain day of the month, that you increase your practice to practicing the 8 precepts. This is called the Upasata day, I think is the way it's pronounced, where a couple of times a month, they will practice the 8 precepts rather than the 5. And this is meant to kind of help them to be able to train their mind more fully and ultimately get to the point where they're more fully practicing the teachings. Because while the 5 precepts are there to help significantly reduce your unwholesome karma through the moral conduct that you're improving by practicing the 5 precepts, you wouldn't be able to get to enlightenment by only practicing the 5 precepts. You would need other teachings, but you also need to increase to having higher precepts to be able to practice that on a consistent, ongoing basis. So for example, the 8 precepts and the 5 precepts, they're third precept is very different in the 8 precepts, where one is actually eliminating sexual contact by the time they make their way to enlightenment. Now, an individual can get to the second stage of enlightenment and still maintain a sexual relationship. But in order to get to enlightenment, an individual would need to be changing and modifying that third precept so that they're actually practicing to eliminate sexual conduct rather than actually just doing unharmful sexual conduct. And there's other teachings like this within the 8 precepts that can enhance an individual's ability to train their mind. So I suspect that's what he's referring to here, because I think he even references it here, the Upasa Day, or maybe it's in another discourse that I've recently read. Yeah, I don't see him referencing it here, but I think he does in a different discourse. So I'm almost certain that's what he's referring to. And this would help an individual to train their mind more and kind of lean into the teachings on the path to enlightenment a bit more. Okay, I'm not seeing any other questions anywhere. So I'll move on to the next chapter, which is chapter 32. This one is titled 4 Modes of Generation of Nagas. And a naga is an actual snake. So this is in line with the previous chapter. So here, this one reads, monks, there are these 4 modes of generation of nagas. What for? Nagas are born from eggs. Nagas born from the womb. Nagas born from moisture. Nagas of spontaneous birth. Therein, monks, nagas born from the womb, from moisture, and born spontaneously are superior to nagas born from eggs. Nagas born from moisture and born spontaneously are superior to nagas born from eggs and from the womb. Nagas born spontaneously are superior to nagas born from eggs, from the womb, and from moisture. These monks are the 4 modes of generation of nagas. So remember, as I was sharing last week, I think it was, that an individual ordaining with the Buddha was really looking to the Buddha for all types of education. Of course, the Buddha is educating people on the path to enlightenment and how to train their mind to get to enlightenment. But they also needed to understand other things like how beings come into the world, where today we have a lot of educational systems and other systems that didn't exist during the lifetime of the Buddha, that individuals were ordaining with him as early as 5, 6, 7 years old, or later in life in their 20s or 30s. And what these people ended up having learned prior to ordaining with the Buddha would have been whatever was being discussed in their home. And they didn't necessarily know how beings were coming into the world, because beings didn't go to school in the way that we do nowadays. Nowadays, we have primary, secondary schools, we have high schools, we have universities and colleges, we have various levels of education that an individual might go through in order to learn science and biology and things about the world around you, where during the lifetime of the Buddha, they didn't have this. So that's why here he's explaining how these snakes come into existence, because this is something that his students may or may not have known, and this would help them to understand the cycle of rebirth in these various realms that he's teaching. So that's why he's teaching this. And you'll see him teach this about other beings too, about how other beings come into existence. So let me know if you guys have any questions on this chapter. You can put it into Facebook, YouTube, or Zoom, or you can raise your hand in Zoom and ask any questions you like. Okay, we'll move on to the next chapter. I'll just let the folks in Zoom know that if you guys would like to read at any point, feel free to raise your hand. Looks like Donnie's gonna volunteer to read this next chapter. Go ahead, sir.
Naga's cause and reason for observing the Upasatha. Here, monks, some egg-born Nagas think thus. In the past, we acted undecidedly in body, speech, and mind. Having done so, with the breakup of the body after death, we were reborn in the company of egg-born Nagas. If today we practice good conduct of body, speech, and mind, then with the breakup of the body, after death, we shall be reborn in a happy destination in a heavenly world. Come now, let's practice good conduct of body, speech, and mind. This monk is the cause and reason why eight-born Nagas here observed the Uposatha and relinquish concern for their bodies. The same is repeated for the other three types of Nagas.
All right, thank you, Donnie. So here, the Buddha is describing how a Naga can be reborn into an improved existence. And it's through this improved conduct of body, speech, and mind that here he's talking about being reborn into the heavenly realm. But remember, that's not the ultimate goal of the path to enlightenment. All five of these realms, whether it's hell, animal realm, afflicted spirits, human realm, or heavenly realm, beings are moving in and out of these realms all the time. It's very rare to be reborn from the animal realm up in heavenly realm, but this is how one would be able to accomplish that. A lot of us in the human realm have come out of the animal realm. This is why some people think human beings are animals when we're not. We're actually a human being, but the unenlightened mind functions very much like an animal. And the more that you can see and understand how animals function versus how the unenlightened human mind functions, you can understand the conditioning of the mind that occurs over countless animal existences. And then now that we're reborn into the human realm in the unenlightened state, the mind oftentimes functions very much like an animal, where an animal is going to be killing and stealing and having sexual misconduct. An animal is going to be doing a lot of play, a lot of fighting, things like this. This is why in the Eightfold Path, you're being guided to purge these animalistic instincts, because that's what's going to help you become more and more human. That's what the path to enlightenment is all about, is training the mind, cultivating wisdom, shedding that conditioning of the animal existences that the mind has taken on over countless rebirths, and becoming a better and better human being so that we can function in the world without killing, without stealing, without sexual misconduct, and all these other things that we tend to do when our mind is conditioned and having this craving, anger, and ignorance. So it's the conduct of body, speech, and mind that improves the condition of our mind, and we can see that in the human realm. And the same thing is true, that these beings in the animal realm, even though they can't really learn the teachings of the Buddha from that existence, there is a certain amount of improvement that they can produce in their animal existence. They can't get to enlightenment, but animals can improve the way they function. This is why if you saw a pack of monkeys, for example, you would see some monkeys that are bitter and harsh and hostile and fighting and stealing, where you would see other monkeys that are more peaceful and more calm and more loving and more kind and compassionate. When humans are involved with animals, we tend to train animals and we tend to help them to improve the condition of their mind, where an animal left to itself has a much harder time to be able to accomplish that. So as we see the shrinking of the animal realm, we see this explosion of the human realm. We're up to 8 billion beings in the human realm. But this is a mere fraction of what actually exists in the animal realm. There's a plethora of beings waiting in the animal realm to be reborn into the human realm. And as more and more opportunity comes available to them, they can then move into human existences or heavenly existences where they'll have the opportunity to get to enlightenment. And it's through improving their bodily, verbal, and mental conduct. So, for example, an animal that is a snake, like here, it's much more challenging to move into a human existence or heavenly existence because they're constantly killing. And this is one of the reasons why a snake's lifespan is so short. Same thing like a lion or something like this. Their lifespan is very short. About 8 to 12 years is what a lion lives because they're constantly killing. These natural laws of existence apply to all beings, whether you're aware of these natural laws or not. And this is why humans tend to have a longer lifespan, because we're not doing the same amount of killing as something like a lion or a snake. So those beings will ultimately be able to make their way to an improved existence, and not only potentially into the human realm or the heavenly realm, but within the animal realm, they're going to need countless rebirths there in order to get to an improved existence, like maybe a rabbit or a turtle or an elephant. These are beings that don't really kill, and they're just eating plants in order to sustain their life. So a rabbit or a elephant has a much better opportunity to get into a human or heavenly existence than a being like a snake or a lion or tiger or something like this that's killing in order to sustain its life. So here the Buddha is just helping you to understand that it's the same natural laws that apply to us and that we learn as part of this path to enlightenment and train our mind to become peaceful, calm, serene, and content with joy through training the mind. It's the same thing for animals. Those are the same natural laws that are affecting them in their rebirth that are affecting us as well. But always keep in mind that the ultimate goal is to escape the cycle of rebirth through getting to enlightenment. So whenever you see the Buddha talking about rebirth in a heavenly world, he's not incentivizing you or encouraging you to do that. He's just helping you to understand that, yes, you know, this is a possibility of something that can occur. So let me know what questions you guys have here. Again, you can put that into Facebook, YouTube, or Zoom. Or in Zoom, you can raise your hand and ask any questions that you like. Okay, I'm not seeing any questions here. So let's see what the next chapter is. We have several chapters this week that are very similar. This one is actually very similar to the last one. There's a very minor difference here. But Donnie, if you'd like to go ahead and read, I see you raise your hand. Go ahead, sir.
To be reborn in the company of eightborn Nagas. First discourse. Here, monk, someone act unwisely in body, speech, and mind. He has heard. Eightborn Nagas are long-lived, beautiful, and abound in happiness. He thinks, oh, with the breakup of the body after death, may I be reborn in the company of eightborn Nagas. Then, with the breakup of the body after death, he is reborn in the company of eightborn Nagas. This, monks, is the cause and reason why someone here, with the breakup of the body after death, is reborn in the company of eightborn Nagas. The same is repeated for the other three types of Nagas.
Okay, thank you, Dani. So it wouldn't be wise to be reborn in the animal realm. The hell realm and the animal realm, the Buddha talks about these as a prison. Because of sustaining your life in the animal realm, oftentimes requires killing. It requires many, 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 many rebirths to be able to get back to the human realm. So here the Buddha is talking about an individual who functions unwisely, that they're making unwise decisions about their bodily, verbal, and mental conduct. And this is why a being would be reborn into the lower realm of the animal realm. So this isn't an ideal existence of what you would be interested in doing. Now that you're in the human realm, it's wise to cultivate the mind and then get to enlightenment in this life. But here the Buddha is providing some guidance of what it takes in order to get reborn into the lower realms, namely the animal realm here. And you need to look at the totality of the Buddha's teachings, that he's not just saying here, this is very general and this is very broad, but you'll see other discourses from him where he's much more specific. So he's not just going to lay out every single thing in one discourse. So here he's kind of giving something more general, more broad. But as you dig into these words of the Buddha more and more closely and you explore more of his discourses, you can put together more of the picture of what's leading to rebirth into the lower realms. Here, again, he's talking very generally, very broadly, but in other teachings, he'll be much more specific of what leads to this rebirth. So here, this is just giving you one particular perspective where other discourses will help you see it more clearly because it's a more detailed discourse. So let me know what questions you guys have here. Okay, I'm not seeing any questions here. These are all very straightforward chapters today. Here, this one is very similar to the one that we just read. There's just a little bit of a changing here. So I don't know that we necessarily need to read this one. It's very similar to what we just read. The Buddha is helping you to understand more about what leads to rebirth into this animal realm, namely being an egg-born Naga or this snake. And then this next one, he's actually talking about the four modes of generation of this being, I don't know how to pronounce this, Suphanas, which in Thailand we refer to this as a Garuda. This is nowadays we consider this a mythical being. It's kind of like partially human, partially bird. And if you've ever seen any documents from the Thai government, they use this as kind of like their mascot on their official letterhead, because this animal is considered to be very strong. Right? So this is actually the very same discourse as we saw about the Nagas that we read earlier, but it's just referring to this particular being. So I don't know that we need to read this one. The Buddha is just explaining these four modes of generation for this particular being. And while nowadays we consider this a mythical being, scientists tell us that 99% of all the beings that once existed in the animal realm are now extinct, that what we see in the world today only represents 1% of what actually existed at one time. So while we consider this a mythical being because none of us have ever seen this being, it seems like this being actually did exist, because the way that the Buddha teaches is he would have only taught something that he experienced through his own direct experience. So if he didn't see something and he didn't experience something, he wouldn't have taught it. So these beings must have existed during the lifetime of the Buddha, but they don't exist now. And these beings that we refer to as Garudas, or here the Supanas, they're kind of like the arch enemy or the rival of the Nagas. The snakes and this Garuda, they're kind of like arch enemies of each other. And this is something that you can understand as well. So here, I'm not going to have you guys read this or teach anything more than that. But if you guys have any questions, let me know and I'll answer those for you. Okay, I'm not seeing any questions here. So let's move to the next chapter. And this one is very similar to the one we just read about the Nagas, but it's referring to this particular being. This is the one that Donnie read, where it's explaining how one gets reborn into this existence. So it's the same thing, by acting unwisely by body, speech, and mind. So we don't need to read that one. It's just applying it to this particular being. And then the same thing, just slightly different. The one related to the Nagas, here related to this particular being. Okay, if we would like to read this one, this is chapter 39. This is the Buddha describing about being reborn into an existence as a dog or an oxen. Is there anyone who would like to read this? There we go. Thanks, Donnie.
The reappear in the company of dogs, to reappear in the company of oxen. Venerable sir, this Sanya is a naked dog duty aesthetic who does what is hard to do. He eats his food when it is thrown to the ground. He has long taken up and practiced that dog duty. What will be his destination? What will be his future course? Enough, Puna, let that be. Do not ask me that. A second time and a third time, Puna, the ox duty aesthetic asked the perfectly enlightened Sin Kerchik. Here, Puna, someone develops the dog duty fully and uninterruptedly. He develops the dog duty fully and uninterruptedly. He develops the dog mind fully and uninterruptedly. He develops dog behavior fully and uninterruptedly. Having done so, on the dissolution of the body after death, he reappears in the company of dogs. But if he has such a view as that, as this, by this virtue or observation or aestheticism or holy life, I shall become a great god or some lesser god. That is wrong view in his case. Now there are two destinations for one with wrong view, I say, hell or the animal realm. So, Puna, if this dog duty succeeds, it will lead him to the company of dogs. If it fails, it will lead him to hell. When this was said, Sanya, the naked dog duty aesthetic, cried out and burst into tears.
Okay, so let me explain this, because the next chapter is very similar to this one. So here, this particular aesthetic, this ordained practitioner, is asking the Buddha this question about where is an individual reborn that eats food from the ground, much like a dog. And the Buddha is saying, don't ask me that, trying to deflect the question and not answer it. But then this aesthetic asks a second and a third time, and the Buddha once again is like, don't ask me that. Essentially, he's not interested in answering it. But because the student is persisting, there's some craving behind this question, and ultimately the Buddha knows that one of the ways to eliminate a craving is to fulfill it. So if he just answers the question, it will eliminate this person's craving, at least help them to do that. So the Buddha ultimately answers it, and he says, okay, if you eat food off of the floor, then you're going to be reborn into this animal existence as a dog. And ultimately, as the Buddha explains that, then this individual walks away crying and upset because this individual is actually eating in that way. So it's not just that this individual is eating in that way that is the reason why he's being reborn as a dog, because if an individual has certain craving, anger, and ignorance in their mind, and they're eating off the floor like a dog, then there's other behaviors and other decisions that they're making as well, much like a dog. This is where in the human realm, you can see individuals that are functioning almost like hell beings. You can see beings who are functioning almost like animals or afflicted spirits. And you can also see humans that are oftentimes functioning very much like heavenly beings too. Their life can be very peaceful. They experience pleasant feelings, very rarely experience any painful feelings here in the human realm, that you can see beings that are kind of on their way to those other realms, and or that they've recently been reborn out of those realms. So here, if a human being is functioning like a dog, then the Buddha is saying, okay, you're going to be reborn into the animal realm as a dog. But if this individual thought that they were going to be reborn as a god, the Buddha is saying, this is wrong view. And a person with wrong view, they're reborn in one of two destinations, which is the hell realm or the animal realm. So right view is established through understanding the Four Noble Truths, understanding the problem, the cause, the elimination, and the path forward. These are the four statements that the Buddha uses to help establish right view, where you understand it's your own mind that's causing these discontent feelings, that it's not something external. This is what the unenlightened mind typically thinks, is that the anger and sadness and frustration, all those discontent feelings, are being caused by something external, so an individual will blame others. And this is wrong view. And the Buddha is saying, well, if you have wrong view, and you die with wrong view, you're going to be reborn in hell or the animal realm. But there's other wrong views that the Buddha teaches as well. This one is the main wrong view of not understanding the Four Noble Truths. So it's very important to establish right view, where you understand wholeheartedly that it's craving, desire, attachment that is causing your own discontent feelings. And that you don't just believe this as a teaching, but you learn it, reflect on it, and practice it, independently verifying that you can see the truth that your mind is causing any discontent feelings. Because if you went around continuing to blame other people for the feelings that you were experiencing, this would be wrong view, and you would be reborn into either hell or the animal realm, which is a very undesirable existence. So that's what the Buddha is explaining here to this particular ordained practitioner. And the Buddha would have known that this individual is going to be upset by sharing this. And that's why the Buddha tried to avoid the question, because the Buddha would have just rather focused this individual on learning and growing and becoming a better and better human being, so they wouldn't be reborn into the animal realm. But this individual just kept pushing and pushing and pushing with their craving. So eventually the Buddha just answers the question. And because of that person's craving, they ended up becoming upset. They caused their own mind to be upset. The Buddha didn't cause that by answering the question. But the Buddha knew with foresight that this individual was going to get upset and have discontent in this, based on their own mind, of course. But that's why the Buddha was ultimately suggesting that he shouldn't answer this question for this person. But when he kept persisting, that's when the Buddha finally answered. So here, this one is very similar, but related to oxen in this particular discourse. So let me know if you guys have questions on this particular discourse. This is chapter 39, how one reappears in the company of dogs as existence in a dog existence or as an oxen. Okay, I'm not seeing any questions here. So let's go to our last chapter for today. It's a very short class. Let's see, there's a lot of writing here that I shared in this chapter. So if there's someone who would like to read this, you can, or I'll go ahead and read it. So this is chapter 40. This one is titled The Vast Plain of Misery. Monks, suppose a man were to cut up the grass, sticks, branches, and foliage in this Jambadapa. I'm not sure how to pronounce that. That's essentially the land or the area of one continent. And collect them into a single heap. Having done so, he would impale the large creatures in the ocean on the large stakes, the middle-sized creatures on the middle-sized stakes, and the small creatures on the small stakes. Still, monks, the gross creatures in the ocean would not be exhausted even after all the grass, sticks, branches, and foliage in this location had been used up and exhausted. The small creatures in the ocean that could not easily be impaled on snakes would be even more numerous than this. For what reason? Because of the narrowness of their bodies. So vast, monks, is the plane of misery. The person who is accomplished in view, freed from that vast plane of misery, understands as it really is. This is discontentedness. This is the cause of discontentedness. This is the elimination of discontentedness. This is the way leading to the elimination of discontentedness. Therefore, monks, an effort should be made to understand. This is discontentedness. An effort should be made to understand. This is the cause of discontentedness. An effort should be made to understand. This is the elimination of discontentedness. An effort should be made to understand. This is the way leading to the elimination of discontentedness. Okay, so a few things that you can gather from a discourse like this. What the Buddha is saying is, okay, if you gathered up all this branches and foliage in this entire continent and you impaled the creatures of the sea on these sticks, there would still be lots and lots and lots of creatures and beings that are in the sea that all these sticks would be taken up. So essentially what he's saying here is there's countless beings in the animal realm. And you can know this to be true for yourself as well, because if you've seen an ant colony or a termite colony or something like this, there's just thousands and thousands and thousands of those. And if you think about the entire planet, there's animals everywhere. And remember, this is only 1% of what once existed. So during the lifetime of the Buddha, 2,500 years ago, there would have been a vast majority of animals. The human population was insignificant compared to the vast number of animals that existed during his lifetime. And even now, with 8 billion human beings on the planet, even still, there's trillions and trillions and trillions of animals that are in the animal realm. So here, the Buddha is helping you to be able to see that the animal realm is vast, that there's tons and tons and tons of animals that exist in the animal realm. Then he's saying here that an individual who is freed from this plane of misery, the plane of misery is the lower realms, hell, animal, and afflicted spirits. Those are the plane of misery. More specifically, it's hell in the animal realm, but any of the lower realms is an undesirable place to be born. And what he's saying here is that an individual who's freed from the lower realms understands as it really is the Four Noble Truths. What he's talking about here is someone who's in the first stage of enlightenment. An individual who's in the first stage of enlightenment is freed from the plane of misery. They will never, ever again be reborn into the lower realms because they've cultivated their mind to a certain point that they've entered into that first stage of enlightenment. And if they die in that stage of enlightenment, they'll come back into the world as a human being with improved chances to be able to get to enlightenment in their future existences. So in order to get to that first stage of enlightenment, among other things that you would need to learn, is you would need to have well-established right view and understanding the Four Noble Truths. So if somebody understands as it really is, discontentedness, the cause, the elimination, and the path forward, then they would be one step closer to being freed from this plane of misery. This month coming up on the 21st through the 26th, I'm going to be teaching all the teachings that an individual would need in order to get to the first stage of enlightenment. And that's going to be live streamed. You can attend by Zoom. And it's also going to be recorded so that you can watch this either on Facebook, YouTube, or on our podcast. You can listen to it. So you're going to get a whole plethora of teachings that you need in order to get to that first stage of enlightenment in one retreat. You won't be able to get to the first stage of enlightenment by the end of that retreat, but you'll have been introduced and explored all the teachings you need to be able to get to that first stage of enlightenment. So if you guys would like to attend here in Chiang Mai, you can at the temple, or you can attend live through Zoom, through the live streams, or you can listen to the recordings if you like. So let me know what questions you guys have on this chapter. You can put that into Facebook, YouTube, or Zoom. So if you have any questions whatsoever, you're welcome to ask all of those. Okay, it looks like we have some questions coming in from Chris here on YouTube. He says, why are the lower realms ordered in the following way we shared? Hell, animal, afflicted spirits. So this is the levels that the Buddha taught, and he taught that the hell realm and the animal realm are like a prison, and that's the way that he ordered them. And then the afflicted spirits, and then human and heavenly realm. So the realm of human being is the ideal realm, as I think you know, Chris, because you've learned this with me before. Beings that are born into the afflicted spirit realm, these are beings that have a significant amount of craving. There's a certain amount of craving, but not as much craving as an animal. And animals don't have as much craving as beings in the hell realm. So the more craving that you have, the more anger and hostility and bitterness that's going to be in the mind, the deeper down into the lower realms that you're going to go, because you need to burn off that unwholesome karma. So if you have a lot of hatred, a lot of anger, a lot of hostility, maybe here in the human realm, maybe individuals are killing, stealing, having sexual misconduct, they're going to most likely be reborn into the hell or animal realms, because they need to live out those cravings to then be able to extinguish them and then move up into the other realms. So the Buddha ordered them this way intentionally, because this is the levels in terms of the amount of craving that a being would have in those various realms. Then Chris is asking here, is the animal realm lower or more challenging than the afflicted spirits realm? Yes, that's true. It's lower and they're more challenged because they're constantly killing. Afflicted spirits don't kill, so they are actually closer to getting into the human realm than a animal. Ian, can you explain the difference between the two? Which one is more challenging and why? So the difference is that in the animal realm, it's a form realm. They experience pleasant feelings, painful feelings, neither painful nor pleasant, and they can't develop their mind to get to enlightenment. The beings in the afflicted spirit realm, they're experiencing the painful feelings, and they're experiencing the neither painful nor pleasant. They don't experience any pleasant feelings in the afflicted spirit realm. And these beings are formless, and they're not able to cultivate their mind to enlightenment. So that's the main difference. One is a formless realm, one is a form realm, and the types of feelings that you experience in those realms. And it's a lot harder to get out of the animal realm than it is the afflicted spirit realm, because of the killing that they do in the animal realm. Okay, so I see you're saying here, Chris, thank you. Yeah, you're welcome. Pleased to help you. Okay, so let's see if we have any questions anywhere else. Okay, I'm not seeing any questions anywhere else. This was just a short class because of the chapters that we had today. And next week, we're going to be exploring the next 10 chapters, chapters 41 through 50. And remember, you can always read those before class if you like. Tomorrow in our group learning program, I'm going to be in volume 1, chapter 18, which is titled God's Creative Action, You Have Free Will. This is where we're going to talk about the being of God, so that you can understand how to get to enlightenment either with a relationship with God or without one. Because God doesn't determine whether you get to enlightenment or not. So you can actually get to enlightenment either with a relationship with God or without one. But depending on what you've been taught in the past, there might be certain things you need to learn in order to improve your understanding of this being if you're going to have a relationship with this being and get to enlightenment. But even if you're not going to have a relationship with this being, you're going to need to know certain things there too to ensure that you can get to enlightenment. So I'm going to help you to understand that tomorrow in our class. And you can attend that either 9 a.m. or 9 p.m. Thai time, since I'm teaching both of those times now. 9 a.m. is at the temple and 9 p.m. is from here at home. And then on Wednesday, we're going to be doing guided breathing mindfulness meditation together. So you're always welcome to join that as well. So thank you, Donnie, for reading. Thank you all for your questions and being interested to learn the teachings of the Buddha. Perhaps we'll see you guys in one of these future classes. We'll see you next time. Sawadee ka.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To provide support for this podcast, visit patreon.com/supportbuddha. To access more teachings, visit buddhadailywisdom.com. There, you will discover a full range of courses, retreats, and online resources to assist you on the path to enlightenment. Remember to establish a daily, consistent meditation practice, along with learning and practicing these teachings. A well-developed meditation practice is the foundation in which to train the mind to attain enlightenment.